Hello, everybody, and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. Kyle's not here today, and we're not introing a specific episode. I'm here with a favorite contributor of the show, by some, Papa Asher, who's here.
Hello, everybody.
And we're talking about the last three episodes of Season 3, which was going to just be the episode A Death in the Family, Season 3, Episode 20, and then we just ended up watching all three episodes of the finale of Season 3. And it is kind of a arc of Sipowitz that I wanted to discuss with Papa Asher, him being a father and all, which is the death of Andy Jr. And I'm going to ask you, the first question I want to ask you is a question that I'm going to ask Kyle when I talk to him about it. Did you cry?
Did I cry?
Yeah, did you cry? Or tear up, because men don't cry, apparently.
No, I didn't cry. It's a TV show.
Yeah, but it's also a pretty dark situation that may cause one to feel sad enough to cry for characters.
As far as you know, I didn't.
As far as I... Oh, okay. So you may have, but you're just not going to say it on the show?
It's a TV show.
Okay. We'll just talk to your attorneys to get the truth. So the last three episodes of Season 3 has... It's also one of the... At least these three episodes, from what I saw on IMDb, A Death in the Family is one of the best reviewed episodes of NYPD Blue.
Reviewed by who?
People that are on IMDb. Just random randos. And I'm sure there's some real deal TV critics there, too. But they rate it pretty high in all the episodes of NYPD Blue.
Okay.
Mostly because of how dark it is, and it's a really interesting growing point for Sipowitz because we see him turn back into the character he was in the very beginning of the show, which is an alcoholic who's kind of a dick to everybody, but they all respect him because he once was a good cop.
Was there a question there?
No, not really. I was wondering if you... I was wondering how you were going to respond. Things that I wanted to talk to you about this specifically, mostly because it gets your dander up. In the episode after A Death in the Family, when Sipowitz is off the wagon and he's getting kicked out of the house and Fancy's telling him to leave home, a little bit of his, I say racism, you say prejudice, comes out in Fancy's office. When he says, this is a good win for the Brotherhood.
Yeah, and he's obviously not himself at that point.
But one could argue that a person is most themselves when they're intoxicated because they're looser and they're...
No.
You disagree?
The whole episode of his son dying has thrown him off of himself. Not the drinking. He's trying to deal with his son being killed. That's why he's not himself at the point.
True. I guess my point is, when he's drinking, he immediately starts to take it out on everybody else.
Everybody else.
His pain.
Not just the black people. Everybody else.
However, the comments that he chose to use too Fancy were racially based. He didn't go into his office and... Well, he did at one point attack him personally, saying, this is what you've always wanted. You wanted the ability to fire me. But then when he sees that hasn't rattled him, he then says something to the effect of, well, this is, you're going to talk about this later in the meeting, in the Brotherhood.
Maybe it's
meeting.
Right there. Maybe what you just said, maybe he's just trying to rattle him.
All right. Maybe so. Because it was.
We've already had this discussion. He's not a racist. That's not the intention of this particular episode.
It just definitely goes to that well once he gets back to that dark place of his that maybe it reveals, you know, reveals a little bit about his personality underneath all of the...
Yeah, his personality is he can be an asshole, but being an asshole, being a racist are two different things.
Okay. All right. You as a father watching this episode,
mm-hmm.
did it hit you... Would you, because you admitted that you didn't cry, or at least you admitted that we won't know if you cried or not. Would you say this affected you harder emotionally at all because it was a father dealing with the death of his son as opposed to other episodes of the show. There was no extra emotional attachment to this one specifically because it's about a guy.
Well, I think that it's something that I could relate to, and thankfully so far, knock on wood, haven't had to deal with. But affect me? No, it doesn't affect me.
Because you don't feel any attachment towards the Sipowicz character.
I like the character.
But you don't feel for him. I guess maybe you just separate yourself entirely from the show emotionally then.
Yes, I would say that's correct.
You just enjoy it for what it is.
For what it is, yes.
All right, fine. That's definitely different than our generation, I think, because we have a lot of misdirected emotional attachments.
Yeah, well, you know, that's your generation.
That makes sense. I mean, that's what that one reviewer guy who really likes you said. We're just, you know, liberal millennials and we don't get it, man. That's the deal.
That's a really long pause.
It's because I thought what we were going to talk about is how hard it was. It was hard imagining what you would do in that situation, especially because Sipowicz as a character is a guy who is slowly redeeming himself to his son because his son had so much ire directed to him because of his drinking.
Yes.
And then his son, who went to the Air Force and then couldn't be in it for, I think, height reasons or something stupid or an injury, he decides he wants to be a cop, and then he is teaching his son all these important lessons, and then his son winds up dead for a lesson he didn't teach him, and he was found dead for just trying to do the right thing, and it didn't turn up his way. And it's almost kind of like, as a father, you go to teach your son the right things, and then what you teach him and what you think you have impressed upon him is what got him killed, like doing the right thing, being a good guy. But I thought you would be more into like, yeah, man, it's difficult to imagine being a father and that happening, but you're just like, oh, I don't know. I don't care. It's Sipowicz. He's not real.
Well,
That didn't happen to Dennis Franz.
I can relate to the fact that he's a father. I think they even say it in the episode that we're not built to bury our own children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very true, whether it's a TV show or real life. I mean, that's not, you know, that's just not supposed to happen. I think that I have a different relationship with my kids than an extremely different relationship with my kids than Sipowicz has with his. I couldn't imagine Sipowicz and his son sitting down and doing something like this.
fair point.
You know, it's more of a, I don't know if the right word is traditional or maybe old school or something like that. But just the event itself of burying your child, I mean, it's devastating, right? Some people never recover from it. So from that perspective, I totally get that, you know, he's going through one of the worst things life could throw at you.
And the way he reacts to it, especially in the very beginning, is kind of just to shut off. Because in that episode of Death in the Family, everyone's trying to offer him help and comfort. And what he does is push all of them away to, like, four tasks, which is to tell Sylvia, tell his ex-wife, see to the arrangements, and make the ID.
Right. So, I mean, basically, the way I see it is, well, two things, really, and I don't know how to explain the first one. He's very, in his own mind, he has I need to be the responsible person kind of drive. He was, you know, as a younger person, alcoholic, wasn't responsible for anything, didn't take care of anything. So I think that plays a part in why he's very task-driven. Okay, now I have to do these things as a responsible father. This is what a responsible father would do. I also think most people drink as a coping mechanism, and he gets back into drinking because he can't cope. He like I said, this is like the worst thing, you know, you could imagine happening to you. And although he hasn't been drinking for a long time, he's still not a mature individual when it comes to adult feelings and relationships and rationale and that kind of thing.
Social skills?
Yeah, right.
Because I mentioned to Kyle, I think the episode before this, episode 19, I asked him just straight out, like, do you think Sipowicz has a social disorder? Because the way Sipowicz deals with Sylvia's pregnancy and the way he talks to people and the way he's very matter of fact with a lot of people, almost like somebody with like Asperger's would, who like doesn't understand empathy or telling people the easy way. He has this tendency to ask people like questions. For example, in that episode, he asked Donna if Sylvia had called because she's pregnant and they're waiting for the arrival of Theo. And she said, well, don't you have a beeper? And he's like, yeah, I have a beeper, but I was wondering if maybe she did it out of habit. And then he starts to insult Donna because Donna asked a question he thought was stupid, but she was just responding to his question, which seemed a little weird. And he does that with people all the time, where he'll start talking to like Fancy about something that clearly Fancy, like, not that he doesn't have interest in what he's talking about, but he's like, I don't know what you want me to say. Or he'll say that, or just when he talks to people, I felt like Sipowicz may have kind of like an underlying social disorder, and instead of working it out, because in his mind, if you're a man, you don't work out your emotional problems,
right?
He was just drinking. And then when he got sober, especially in the first season, there's like being dry is different than being sober. He was kind of just doing it. He was like, okay, well, this is the right thing to do because I'm better when I'm sober. But it wasn't for the right reasons. And this spat he has at the end of season three is kind of a wake-up call that he needs to be sober for the right reasons or else he'll lose everything again.
Spat with who?
Oh, with drinking. Oh. The whole arc where he starts drinking.
I think it's multi-layers, right?
Multi-layers.
He's an old school male, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't show emotion. Don't take any crap from anybody. You know, he's a known alcoholic, so he has some flaws in his personality because, I mean, you know, as far as I know, that's why, or that's how some people start drinking, is because they can't cope with a situation or they're looking for some answer for something somewhere. So he's got that going on. And there's no doubt that this dude is an awkward individual.
Oh, yeah, completely.
Just the way he talks, the way he structures his sentences, the way he thinks, he's just different than a lot of people. So there's a lot of layers there.
He's also, if I can cut in, he's also Polish, which this is something I didn't even realize that a lot of people in my generation don't understand. Polak jokes and Polak things, like Polish nonsense, that was a thing, like, before we were conscious and aware of it. There were a lot of jokes and a lot of disparaging of that culture.
Yeah.
Also, he's not, no offense, he is not an attractive dude. He is, like, when you see Dennis Franz, Andy Sipowicz come into a room, he is not a dude that you're immediately like, let's go talk to that guy. It's very much, I always call him, like, the hedgehog, because when he comes in, he's kind of blustery. He's a little large. He's not a person that, just by the looks of him, people want to go and talk to him. I think, and also that might sound mean, but I also understand that psychologically and just socially, people tend to gravitate towards people that are more attractive than those that are not. And Sipowicz, growing up, was a Polish, weird named. He was I think we get into it way later in the show. He had an abusive father. He doesn't talk to people correctly, so he kind of grew up feeling like, oh, well, people aren't important. Like, being close to people isn't important because they'll shut you out or disengage with you. So I think drinking was him like, oh, everybody likes me when I'm drinking. I'm nicer and I'm more sociable. And I'm
I don't agree with that.
You don't agree with the he drinks to be sociable?
Yeah.
He just drinks to dull pain?
He drinks
pain?
To cover something.
Because
he doesn't drink and then all of a sudden become life of the party.
Because when that's true. I'll walk that back because every scene they show of him drinking, it's just lined up drinks.
Right.
And he's smoking by himself.
Yeah.
And he always had that scheduled meeting with Louise, I think was her name, was a prostitute. He was, he basically just sat there and drank. And, you know,
he drinks to mask pain of something.
What I did find interesting, and I know Kyle's going to disagree and hate it a lot, the last episode of this season, which is He's Not Guilty, He's My Brother, I think that's the title.
Yeah.
There's a lot of God in it. There's a little bit of God in the second episode of these three episodes where Andy's drunk at work. He's obviously going back to his old ways. And then Sylvia's priest comes to visit him. And he has this really emotional scene, and he says, where was God when my son was shot? And if he's punishing me, why is he punishing my wife and my kid who never did anything wrong? And it's a dark, and then the guy says that one line, God had a son, and Andy just goes, well, I am not God. And it was kind of, it was dark.
So I've got a couple of takes on that. So I think that him, when he has that discussion with the priest and he talks about why is he punishing my ex-wife, why is he punishing, I forget who he says, Sylvia or whatever, I think that's more of him realizing that he wasn't the person he needed to be back then, and he feels guilty for the fact that he wasn't the person he's supposed to be. And now that his son is dead, he can never even attempt to make it right. So that was my take on it, was he's on the surface blaming it on God, but he's really blaming it on himself. There was also a scene, I don't know if you noticed it, I thought it was pretty good, when the priest comes to talk to him, Andy's in the cage, and the priest is standing outside of the cage looking in. And I kind of thought, okay, so that's him kind of all boxed in his grief and suffering. And the priest is trying to say, hey, you know, use religion and that'll make you feel better. So I like that, the way they had that scene set up. But somewhere down the line there, I forget which episode it's in, I think it's the last one, he goes into that church and starts saying prayer about, hey, you know, look after my oldest son. But the question has to be asked, has he replaced drinking with religion as his coping mechanism?
Which is kind of weird, because that's how that conversation in the interrogation room goes, where he says, embrace the third part of your 12-step program, which some people don't know this, and it's pretty interesting. The 12-step program for getting off drugs and alcohol or other addictions has a lot of religious overtones. It was invented by, I think it was invented by two Jewish guys. I might be completely wrong on that. It's a lot of admit that there's a higher power, give yourself over to that higher power, and relinquish your troubles to that higher power, which is a very religious concept.
Right.
Because I had heard one comedian talking about it, that for atheist guys, they say to put that higher power onto something scientific that's physically provable, like, because they don't want to mention God, they say put it on the idea of the sun. Like, the sun is bigger than you, and it has existed before you and will exist after you, and it's in charge of the, wow, I can't believe that word left my brain. It's in charge of the rotation of all the planets, and they're a night and day. So that is a higher power that you can throw, like, your insecurities on, I guess. It's weird. But what's funny is, there are people that say, well, if the crutch is religion, at least that's something better.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Because people use religion in dark ways.
If you're using religion as a crutch, is it really better?
Now, are you coming from the standpoint, is it better that you don't actually believe in the tenets of that religion, you just believe in its results for you? Or that the religion, like, how do you mean by that?
What I mean is having anything, instead of being able to, I don't know, I keep using the word cope, maybe that's not the right word, but deal with the fact that his son has gotten killed.
Mm-hmm.
First he leans on alcohol, then it seems like he starts leaning on religion.
Mm-hmm.
If you're leaning on something to get through a devastation, to me, you're not really getting through it. You're leaning on something for the help. And granted, everybody needs help, but you need and your being needs to go through something that's that devastating to get out on the other side. Otherwise, you'll never fully recover. If you are genuinely religious and you're using religion to help you, that's one thing. But I think we can both say that he's not a religious man.
No, he isn't.
And so leaning on religion is just another form of avoidance, I guess, or just not fully accepting what's happened and all the, you know, terrible things that comes with it, I guess. You know, whether it's alcohol, religion, whatever, you're not fully engaged in the process.
Yeah, that makes sense. And also, this is the end of season three, and there are 12 seasons. And this is obviously a show not like, I can't even think of a good example. It's not like a show that had an end thought. It was a show that started, and then once it was meeting success, it just kept going. And I believe it stopped because Dennis Franz was like, I think 12's good. I think 12 is fine. But as the character goes on, he meets more tragedy. And like you were saying, if he's just replacing the post that he leans on, he's just going to fall over again.
Right.
It's, I think my favorite part of these couple episodes is it highlights exactly who Sipowicz is when he's drinking and not drinking. Because for a long time, we've seen Sipowicz sober and kind of on top of things.
Right.
Where he's helping out Russell. He's connecting more with Simone. He's with Sylvia, and that's going well. And now they have a kid. He's patching things up with his son, and everything's going peachy keen. And then his son dies, and then he becomes the guy we meet in episodes 1 and 2. Well, I think episode 1 ends with him being shot. So we meet the guy we meet in episode 1, where he's yelling at Sylvia, "Ipsa this, you prissy little bitch!" When he's like yelling at Fancy and basically carrying on in the squad room like he's better than everyone, even though he's a drunk. And he's back to that guy that nobody wanted around in those first couple seasons. And then we get to see him as he starts recovery again, when he accepts responsibility. And it's really cool because you get to see basically the whole scope of Sipowicz as a character in the best seasons of NYPD Blue within 3 episodes. And I will say one thing that was kind of odd. When he gets beat up by the 3 black gentlemen on that corner, he's in a drunken stupor, and he rolls up to one guy and just tells him to leave. And I don't remember what I thought the first time I saw it, but I do know when I saw it this time, I was like, that's fucked up. Like, they're not doing anything. They're just talking loudly and carrying on. And then I feel like they made those characters villainous by having them steal his gun and then lying about doing it. Because when he just comes up and says, I need you to move off this corner, and the guy's like, I can smell the liquor on your breath, dude. You're drunk. Also, we're not doing anything wrong. And then Sipowicz gets up in his face a little bit more, physically pushes him, and then the guy pushes back. They hit him to the ground, and they start kicking, like beating his ass. But then they then take the extra second to go grab his gun. And then they grab his gun and run away with it. And then when they capture him later, he lies saying, I didn't even know he was a cop. I didn't even know we thought he was going to use that gun against us. But they knew he was a cop, like, from the way he was talking to him early on. And I felt like that was unnecessary to turn them into villains for this story. But that's just a little thing, and I don't know if you have anything to comment on it.
Well, I don't know. I think one of the things, I guess there's a couple thoughts I have, right? Number one is, did he go looking for to get beat up? He's clearly not happy with himself, I guess. So, you know, did he want that fight to take out, to escalate? I think probably he did. And the way that African-American folks are treated in New York, is it a surprise that they wouldn't have wanted to get over on this guy? I don't know. I mean, you hear about a lot of abuse stuff, and I don't think they were, I don't know. I didn't think it was that unrealistic. They didn't certainly didn't start the trouble, but they weren't a couple of like librarians either. They weren't choir boys.
Well, because there are two things that happen that really kind of humanize those that dude for me. Because his name was something Knowledge. His for some reason his name was Knowledge Islam. And when they bring him in for questioning on what happened, they mention, oh, so how long have you been working at the A&P, which I guess is like a grocery store? And he said, 4 years. I've been promoted from this to this to this. So the dude's a working dude.
Yeah.
And fairly intelligent.
Yeah.
Then the other thing that struck me that really humanized his character is when Fancy comes into the room, because that's another thing that I won't get into in this episode because I'm sure I'll get into it with Kyle. Fancy fucking rules in the second episode of this arc, because Sipowicz gets himself in a real bind, and all the efforts to hide it from Fancy, assuming he'd get fired, turns into Fancy's helping him the most to help him keep his job.
Yeah.
But Fancy goes into this interview with this guy and says, so you're going to tell us where the gun is? And the guy's like, yeah, sure. And then you beat my ass for 4 hours. He's like, do you think we want it to get into the press that a cop did this to you? And the guy says, okay, then I take you to the gun and you kill me and you throw me in the river. Because that guy's immediate response, which is pretty justified, is these cops are willing to do anything to protect one of their own. Even though, from his perspective, what that guy did was defend himself and then take a weapon away from him that could kill him. And now he's like, these guys will kill me if I show him where the gun is. And Fancy does that super gangster thing by going, how about me, you, and your mother go pick up the gun, and then you walk her home.
Yeah, but you're kind of confusing this guy. Either he has a dislike or fear of the cops, which he exhibits towards Fancy, or he doesn't, and it surprises you that he took his gun after he beat him up.
No, I think...
You're painting two pictures, I think.
Well, no. I'm saying he fully recognized at that moment that cops are willing to protect their own, and at that moment
realized...
Right,
which is, if that's his firm belief, that's not a positive opinion of the police.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
And you're...
So to take his gun isn't that far off of what this guy thinks of police.
Yeah.
But just before this whole thing started, it was, I can't believe he took the gun. They made him a villain.
Well, I guess that's a point that I didn't think about. Well, because I feel like NYPD Blue, because of the time it was made, couldn't actually pull off the nuance of, like, The Wire that it wanted to do. Sometimes it does. Like, it does with a couple of CI characters we've seen in this season and other people that are witnesses, where good and bad is kind of hard to determine based on these people, because that guy was doing nothing, just hanging on the street. A drunk cop comes up to fuck with him. The cop pushes him. The guy reacts and then physically, like, they beat him up because he was attacking them. Then his initial response is, let's take his gun away, which could be seen as A, that's really messed up and, I don't know what the word is, illegal and felonious, I guess. Or B, he thinks if we start running, this guy's going to pop up with his gun and start shooting at us.
And that's what he said.
So let's say...
we didn't want to get shot in the back.
So let's say it is that reason. Now he's faced with... because he just did that to a random cop. For all he knows, that cop's retired. Or for all he knows, that cop is like somebody nobody likes or nobody's going to miss. But then he's brought into... or maybe he's just reacting in the moment. My point is this. His reason for doing what he did,
yeah,
I think, was to make him look bad. But then when he's put in the situation where there are three cops, one of which is mentioned as a lieutenant, which means he's pretty high up, and also black. So it's not like a completely race thing. Like, it's not guys that hate black people.
Okay.
And he realizes, okay, there's like a task force to get this guy's gun back, which means he must have been pretty well liked or pretty important. So now I'm faced with a situation that could lead with me dead. So now I have to act in a way that will save my own skin. So I don't know. Maybe NYPD Blue did do a good job. It's just, I feel like they painted that guy as a bad guy because they had to, when really that guy didn't do anything wrong. In my opinion.
No, and I don't think they painted him as that bad of a guy. Yes, he did take the gun, but yes, he did give it back. Yes, they didn't press charges.
Yeah, that's true.
He had a cop come at him on the streets, drunk as a skunk, got into a fight, he took the gun, they called him in, they said, we want it back. He said, don't kill me. They said, okay, we won't kill you, give him the gun back. Okay, give him the gun back.
Yeah. It's, I guess it's just a weird situation.
And they, you know, make it a point, like you said, to say, hey, he's, you know, done well in his job and all this. So I don't think they paint this guy in that negative of a light.
I don't really know where to go from here other than... I think in the third episode, they have him mention his son to kind of show that he can talk about it now. Weirdly, when he's interrogating Jigsaw, he, like, drops that information on him. It almost seems out of place where he just is, he's like, yeah, you could give your brother a life. Like, I had a son that had his whole life ahead of him, and then he died. And it was kind of like, I don't know if that was a good time to drop that information. But it was. I guess it was kind of a moment to let us know that, and when he prays to God in that church, he's settling down to what happened to his son, and now we can move forward, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm not real. What's the word I'm looking for? Convinced.
Not convinced.
I'm not convinced that his praying in church is legit. In other words, he didn't all of a sudden become a religious person.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it's a support mechanism at this point. If he was to, you know, get fully engaged in everything, which we know he doesn't do, that would be one thing. But you know, I, just like, you know, you in all kinds of different situations in life, some guy kills 12 people, goes to jail, oh, but now he's found God. Really? Nah, I don't know. You know, I just think that sometimes it's used as a crutch and not as a true belief. That's fair. That. I do think, you know, at one point during these things, a couple of times he does say to Simone, and he does say, I believe, to Fancy, please help me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he recognizes that he needs help, which is, you know, I don't know for sure firsthand, but it's, you know, supposed to be, that's a big part of getting better is recognizing that you need help. So he get there. He's a tortured soul in the fact that when he drinks, he is rude and mean to everybody.
Yeah.
Right? It's like some people drink and they're happy and loving and, you know, get funnier and, you know, go down that road. When he drinks, he's just a dick to everybody.
Yeah, pretty much.
And that's, there's something there in his personality that he's, that's, when he's not drinking, he's suppressing. And then once the alcohol gets into him, it comes out and he's, like I said, he's tortured in some way. Like, you know, later on you find out like his father abused him or whatever. But beyond that, I mean, he didn't have a great relationship with his own son, which I have to imagine would just eat at somebody. You know, they were trying to get it back, and it seemed like his kid was trying to make him proud, and he was proud, and so they were building their relationship. But when it ended so abruptly, you know, that's tearing at him. I think that even though he's married to Sylvia and he, you know, for the most part, that's a good thing. He has regrets and guilt for not being the husband that he should have been with his first wife. So he's just, you know, he's just an unhappy person to the core. And then when something terrible happens to him, he just goes way off the deep end. That's my take.
Alrighty. I can't think of anything else to bring up. And now Max is awake, so he'll start barking. I just looked up something. It was the four types of drunks, because I did read it somewhere. Apparently there are four types of drunks according to science, according to scientists. There's the Ernest Hemingway, which is someone that doesn't change that much when they drink. They kind of just become more themselves. They equate this to Ernest Hemingway being drunk most of the time when he wrote, but it didn't really affect the way he wrote. One's Mary Poppins, when they get sweeter and nicer. The other is the Nutty Professor, which is the guy who gets more comical and more clumsy. And then there's Mr. Hyde, where they become a dickish version of themselves. And that's what he becomes. He becomes Mr. Hyde. Yeah, he's an interesting character. And that's why he kept the show going for 12 years. Anyway, unless you got something else to say about these last couple episodes?
No, well, the only thing I can add to it is John's back.
Oh, yeah, John's back. At least we don't know. I mean, people who watch the show know. But John was in the last episode of season 3. And they got rid of... Because Donna leaves. It's another thing no one cares about, which is kind of annoying. Donna leaves in Death in the Family. They get a new PAA who sucks. And then they remind us that John exists, I think, giving us the foreshadowing that John's going to be around more. And John is the best PAA of NYPD Blue, in my opinion. Most men disagree because he doesn't have the tits, ass, and face of Donna Abbondando. But John, I think, is the much better character. And, yeah, we have that to look forward to.
Making comment about Sipwith not being a good-looking man, but through the seasons, he marries the district attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Who's not a bad-looking woman.
Mm-hmm.
Then later on, somebody that's like 30 years his junior.
Well, that's when the show...
Okay.
We can all admit...
So, apparently, that's he's when the got show. Some appeal to somebody.
We can all admit that those seasons of the show is when they kind of threw out any aspect of realism in terms of the personal lives of these characters.
I don't know.
Oh, man. Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on Asher Brothers Podcast.
Every episode?
Every episode. AsherBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes and Stitcher, and where you find a podcast. We're on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod, Instagram Asher Brothers Podcast. And you can talk about the shows with us, and we'll mention it on the shows that we do. And NYPD Blue is on Hulu and Amazon Prime as of the time we recorded this. So you could be binging it all the time on those streaming services. And other than that, have a good one.
Later.
Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls, especially this special version with Papa Asher. Thank you so much. If you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, you can always check out the books True Blue. You can check out An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue by Gene Kendall. It's on Amazon. I think it's 99 cents. It's a steal. You can watch more of the show on Hulu and Amazon. It's up there with a bunch of other great shows you could watch. So get those streaming services and start watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue, or keep watching it. I imagine if you're listening to this, you're already an avid watcher of NYPD Blue. So thank you for listening to this. Thank you for watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And hey, if you want to talk to us, I mentioned our social media handles earlier in the show. You can talk to us about specific episodes and we'll bring them up in the show. Or if you just want to talk to us about the show, we'll talk to you about it. We love the show. We love talking about it. Anyway, peace.